Hello and welcome back to the podcast. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at a love story. A love story that is deeper than anything Hollywood can produce. And it has more twists and turns than them too. We're looking at the book of Hosea. So get ready to drop into the world of this 8th century BC prophet and see what the message is for the church today too.
Well, if you were here last week, you'll know we started to look at this book of Hosea. And we saw a marriage where a good guy, Hosea, was marrying a bad girl called Gomer. A marriage that, if it was between your two friends, you would be standing up in the ceremony. Does anyone know any reason why these two cannot be joined in holy matrimony? Well, yes, I know. And God had said to go through this marriage as a living parable. A living parable that demonstrated a small bit of what the relationship between God and Israel was like. To remind us, flick back to Hosea chapter 1, verse 2. When the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, "Go marry a promiscuous woman and have children with her, for like an adulterous wife, this land is guilty of unfaithfulness to the Lord." And in our passage this evening, you can see that issue again and again and again. Chapter 2, verse 2, adultery. Chapter 2, verse 4, adultery. Chapter 2, verse 5, unfaithfulness. Actually, the same word as we had before, adultery. So the question to ask, the one I want us to think about is, what would you expect God to do next? If you were in God's position, what would you do next? Well, as we enter back this evening into Hosea's world, we're entering a law court. And it's a very odd law court with a very public divorce proceeding. The word we have there, rebuke, in the very first word in verse 2, well, that's legal language. Hosea is calling for his wife to be rebuked. In fact, he's calling his children to come forward as witnesses and rebuke their mother for the adultery that she has been in. As I said, this is a divorce case. Now, I don't want to make this jovial. Perhaps you've been through or you've been party to a divorce case. Perhaps you've been a witness to one. If so, you will have felt more of the emotion in this passage than I have. You see, Hosea's wife, Gomer, has lived up to her name and has jumped into bed with other men. And now Hosea is going to divorce her. And this divorce is public. So what do you expect Hosea to do with his wayward wife? Well, let's remember that this is just a small picture, a small parable of what is going on between Israel and her God. Have a look at verse 8. Hosea's pretty sloppy with his pronouns. Well, actually, he's quite clever with them. Let me highlight them for us. She has not acknowledged that I was the one who gave her the grain, the new wine and oil, who lavished on her the silver and gold, which they used for Baal. See, as Hosea is publicly airing his divorce proceedings with the world around, he's pointing the people to a bigger picture. Just as his children had been walking around with the names they'd been given, now the whole of Israel can see this divorce proceeding unfolding before their very eyes. And it's meant to speak to them. So we have a court summons. We have the parties laid out. Yahweh, God, versus Israel. Now it's time for the evidence. This is the first time that we've been let into what's actually going on in Israel. Verse 5 highlights the issue for us. Their mother has been unfaithful and has conceived them in disgrace. She said, "I will go after my lovers, who give me my food and my water, my wool and my linen, my olive oil and my drink." Just remember who these people are that God is speaking to. These are the people who were dramatically rescued out of Egypt. They were brought across water through the wilderness, planted into a land flowing with milk and honey. Yet they're running after other lovers who they believe give them all that they need. Isn't that outrageous? Doesn't that sound absurd? These people, they're thinking to themselves, Yahweh, yes, he's good for an exodus, but what about the day-to-day? God is able to do the big, impressive stuff, but he doesn't really care about the small, little things, does he? What should God do? What do you expect God to do? He can't just wink at sin. He can't just let it go. Something must be done. That's what verses 6 and 7 are saying. Verses 6 and 7, therefore, God frustrates their desires. You see, thorn bushes, they're the trick of the trade if you're a farmer, to make sure that your sheep stays where it's meant to be kept. And that picture of a wall, it's what God is going to do to his people. He's going to frustrate their desires. And the God then is the same God as now. God still does the same thing today. Just think about it. God has made sin frustrating, hasn't he? Even though we can run after the things that we think we want, in the end, they're shown to be bankrupt, aren't they? That very thing that promises us satisfaction just doesn't satisfy, does it? God, in his judgment and in his mercy, frustrates desires. The second piece of evidence is submitted, verse 8. She has not acknowledged that I was the one who gave her the grain, the new wine and oil, who lavished on her the silver and gold which they used for Baal. The very things that God had given to his people were being used in the service of this false god, Baal. Just remember that the time this is written, this is a prosperous time for Israel. And the readers in Judah, when they come to read this, well, they're in a very similar situation. And this is the very first time we've had this false god named, Baal. Simply put, Baal means master. Baal was a fertility god. He was the god that the people who used to live in the land of Israel worshipped. So in come Israel, they're led by their Exodus god, and they see the people of the land with their fields flowing with milk and honey, and they think to themselves, you know what? We need a piece of that god. Now that's all sounding a bit primitive, isn't it? Grain, wine, oil, I mean Tesco Extra down in Jarman Park, well that sells that stuff. But we can just do the same thing, can't we? In fact, isn't our nation at the moment in a similar position of prosperity as we see the level of secularism rise and the level of religion, the level of Christianity in this land drop? You see, when we use the good things God has given us to serve those very things. We thought about it with Sam this morning, didn't we? When our time that's meant to be used to glorify God is used to glorify ourselves. When the money that God has given us becomes the very thing that we want to run after. I mean, we know we're not very much different, don't we? As a church, do we acknowledge that God is the one who's going to grow us? That's what the Bible says. Or do we want to turn to other things, the next big event, the next technique for bringing people through the door? Sometimes it can just be trying to fit in, going to the social club, joining in with the lads. But sometimes fitting in means squeezing God out. I don't know if the people of this time would have known that they were doing these things so blatantly. But Hosea's sermon here should have made them think. And it should make us think also. So what is God going to do in light of that evidence? What should God do in light of what these people are doing? Well, he's going to judge. He's going to punish. He's going to take away absolutely everything that he has given to this people. He's going to expose the poverty of the things these people are trusting in. And when these things are gone, Who are they going to turn to? That's two bits of evidence in this divorce case. Is there any more evidence to submit? Well, yes, there is. Verse 13. God says, I will punish Israel for the day she burned incense to the Baals. She decked herself with rings and jewelry and went after her lovers. But me, she forgot, declares the Lord. The people have forgotten God. So what should God do about that? If we're following the trajectory of where this is going, well, he should judge, shouldn't he? That's what he's been saying before. We've seen that all the way through so far. But what does God do? Well, he shows abundant grace. He gives hope for the future. Have a look down at verse 14. Therefore, I'm going to allure her. I will lead her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. Now, all couples have a special location, don't they? Looking around the room, see some nods. If you were to take Izzy and myself to a very specific lamppost in Verulamium Park, that's going to mean something to us. They won't mean for anybody else. That's right, isn't it, Izzy? Yeah. Well, you see, for Israel, the wilderness is their place. After this judgment, after this punishment, when everything is taken away and all the people have been left with is wilderness, when everything's been taken away, it's going to be just like at the start of Israel and God's relationship. See, God called his people to himself in the wilderness. The covenant, the promises he made to them were made in the wilderness. You see, the place of judgment can be turned into the place of relationship again. They have forgotten me, says Yahweh, so I will show them love again. Isn't that just amazing? These people, well, they deserve judgment and they're going to receive judgment. But after that judgment has fallen, the relationship can still be fixed. God has to judge. He is just. But the judgment doesn't have to be the final word. In that day, there will be a complete rejection of past sin, as far as the east is from the west. In that day, there's going to be a completely new covenant. In that day, there's going to be global peace and security. In that day, there's going to be a relationship that's going to last forever, where the people will know God fully. God is going to dwell with his people in his place once more. You can't get better than that, can you? Judgment must fall on these people, but salvation can come afterwards. We turn to Hosea again in chapter 3. Again, Hosea's life is a living parable of God and Israel, but he demonstrates this love and return in just a small way as he takes Gomer back. Just hear how she's described in verse 1. The Lord said to me, go, show your love to your wife again, though she is loved by another man and is an adulteress. Love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cakes. Love her just as the Lord loves the Israelites. So what does Hosea do? Well, he goes back. He takes her back and he shows her the love we just sung of that will not let her go. Here's a picture of Hosea's recommitment back to Gomer. It's explained in verses 4 and 5. And in those verses, we see a clear prediction of what's going to happen for these people. You see, they did return to their land, but not with the prince. But as the stage was set for God's rescue plan to take place, well, a king was born. A king who was going to take a bride and would give himself up for her. A king who would take the very judgment that the bride deserved, because judgment has to fall. A king who, though undeserving of it, took every last drop of that judgment upon himself. And in doing so, he opened up the way to salvation for his bride. He made her holy, cleansed her, presented her to himself without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, holy and blameless. I'm quoting Ephesians 5 there, if you haven't noticed. We'll be there next Sunday morning. On this side of the cross, we can see this purchase in vivid colour. And Hosea's call, the whole point of Hosea, is to call his people to wake up, to realise the mess that they're in. If you flick right to the end of Hosea, that's where we're going to finish. As we go through the rest of this book, we need to know where it's going. Hosea chapter 14, verse 9, page 911. Who is wise? Let them realise these things. Who is discerning? Let them understand. The ways of the Lord are right. The righteous walk in them, but the rebellious stumble in them. It's the message of the gospel there, isn't it? It's either foolishness or wisdom. Run into the arms of Jesus, who's taken the punishment that is deserved. Run to Jesus, who's opened the gates of salvation. Walk in the ways of the Lord. Just stop rebelling. That's a message we can hear daily, isn't it? A message we can tell ourselves daily. And that's a message that this world, this town of Hemel Hempstead around us, needs to hear too, isn't it? God is going to judge. He's just. He will judge. But judgment, which is going to fall on every person, can lead to salvation, because the judgment has been taken by Jesus.
I hope you found that helpful and edifying. If you have any feedback or questions, feel free to reach out to me via email. The details are in the show notes. But until next time, let's keep praising God this week.